You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Today, we turn the calendar to December, and storms arriving to the region seem to signal a promising start for snowfall to ease California's prolonged drought. But for now, the overall outlook is not optimistic. Federal climate scientists at NOAA have forecasted a warmer and drier than average winter for California and the broader Western United States. And according to the U.S. Drought Monitor, much of the state is experiencing severe to exceptional drought conditions. All of this suggests California could be in for another year with less water. So what can Californians expect in the upcoming years as our climate's future becomes more uncertain? Here to help us answer those questions and explain how California can thrive with less is Jeffrey Mount, a senior fellow with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC. Jeffrey, welcome back to Insight. Nice to see you.
Actually, nice to see you in person.
I know. It's wonderful. I know. We actually met in person for the first time. It's wonderful. Right. We were just talking about how we're talking about thriving with less water at a time when we have we have decent systems moving through our area this week. But things like this really are a drop in the bucket when it comes to the longstanding issues of California's climate and how it's becoming more unpredictable.
Right. We have a tendency to focus on the now. It's raining outside and it's cold and it's snowing. It's delightful. It's a drop in the bucket. And this is a really vanilla storm. We really need those frog chokers that we expect in the winter, those really big storms with the atmospheric rivers to bust this.
And kind of touching upon that is your report included an excerpt from John Steinbeck's East of Eden. And the quote is, "During the dry years, the people forget about the rich years. And when the wet years returned, they lost all memory of the dry years, and it was always that way." Does it seem to be it's always that way now?
Yeah, the modern version is the disaster memory half-life is short. We forget. And that's just human nature, except the people like us who are in the trenches working on this stuff all the time.
Right. You are knee-deep into being a water policy expert.
Good metaphor.
Yeah. How far does this annual report go back?
So we've been doing this report in this current form about 5 years, but elements of it go back as much as 9 or 10 years. So on our website, you can look at the historic ones. You can track our changes in our opinions and our observations over the years by looking at it on our website.
You know, given that we've had years-long conversations locally about water challenges and California's increasingly unpredictable climate swings, what is the main headline for this year's annual report?
So the key is that there's an elephant in the room that we dance around all the time, because that's what you do when you've got an elephant in the room. And that is, we are looking at a future in which there's likely to be less available water. I mean available for supply to the three key sectors, which is communities, farms, and the environment. So we're looking at basically how to thrive with less. And the argument we make in this report is we can. In fact, we have. There's plenty of evidence that we have. We're still here. We've added 10 million people since 1980, and we're still using the same amount of water we were back then. So we can adapt to this thing, and these changes. But to be clear, we're not looking at more available supply.
Given that you have been really studying this for nearly a decade, how has the purpose of compiling these annual reports on the state of California's water, how has it evolved along with the climate challenges over those years?
And that's what you've hit it in a nutshell. Climate has become increasingly a more important, if not central, theme in these reports, because it's here. Climate change was viewed and is still viewed by most people as something that's happening in the future. It's not. It's here. It's here now. We're seeing its effects, particularly during drought, where we're seeing these warmer, drier droughts. So things have changed. And that should change your outlook for the future and your actions today.
Yeah. You know, given that you go back to like 2017 when we had, you know, a very high water year, and then obviously what happened up in Butte County at Oroville at the spillway. But then you have that compounded with back-to-back years of drought-like conditions. You know, when it comes to looking at the state of the water, how has that changed over just the last 5 years, going back to 2017 to now in 2020?
Well, okay, so that's a great illustration of something that the climate scientists were predicting 15, 20 years ago, is that we were going to see changes in conditions where we'd have wild swings between wet and dry, wetter wets and drier dries. Our whole water supply infrastructure system is built around basically the climate of the mid-20th century. So this is a new thing for us to deal with. 2017 broke our biggest water supply structure for the State Water Project at Oroville. And 2012 and 2016 broke our groundwater system. And this latest drought really broke our surface water system. What I think people forget is 2021 was a miserable year. I mean, absolutely miserable year. We consumed 100% of the water that ran off the watershed in the Central Valley. None of it made it to the ocean. Instead, we had to rely on reservoirs to keep the delta fresh enough so we could use it. Forget the environment for a second. That's how dire things were in 2021. So we've been breaking things for the last 10 years is the best way to describe it. And in the process of breaking things, we're finding out weaknesses in our systems that we need to address if we're going to cope with these wild swings between wetter wets and drier dries.
And when talking about drought, California isn't alone to drought struggles. On November 1st, like a month ago, the U.S. Drought Monitor found, I think, about 85% of the continental United States to be abnormally dry or in a state of drought. How does that impact California?
So actually, this is one of the things that people in Sacramento forget, that we're tied to a grid. That's the best way to describe it. Think of it like the electricity grid that we have in California. We are part of a large grid that serves most of the people in the state. And that includes the whole Colorado River Basin. So all of the seven states that are part of the Colorado River Basin. And the mega drought, which is a phrase that always makes us wince when we hear it, but that's what we call it, the mega drought, has spilled over into California. I mean, only the last 10 years, we've only had two wet years. Mm-hmm. You know, that's pretty grim when you think about it. Well, that's what it's been like for the last 22 years in the Southwest. And if you live in L.A., which is the economic engine of California, and you can't forget that, you are heavily reliant on the Colorado River for supply. And things are looking pretty dire in the Colorado. I can't sugarcoat it. That 22 years of dry conditions is really coming to bite.
Yeah, I can't help but think of, we're talking about mega drought, and the last time you joined us, we were analyzing a forecasted or projected mega flood in the coming decades. And I think that really, on a macro level, encompasses these dramatic pendulum swings.
Yeah, and also remember that most of the time we really compartmentalize the way we manage water. We got sort of drought-focused management, and completely different agencies and organizations are on the flood management side. So what's been happening over the last 10 years, with credit to California and the federal government and local agencies, they're really trying to merge these two. One of the key themes of this particular report that we gave is that we really do have to do a better job of taking advantage of these rare, very wet periods. Because if we don't take advantage of those, we suffer in between much more than we need to. So wet year strategies are as critical as dry year strategies.
What needs to improve with storage? Because there's a lot that needs to improve with storage,
right,
especially in wet years, and we can't retain all of it.
That's right. And there's always the what we call the gray infrastructure people who want us to build dams everywhere. Well, you can't afford it. I mean, the problem, there's a cost associated, both an environmental cost and an economic cost associated with lots of new big construction. And we've built dams in all the good spots in California. So now you have sort of marginal spots. And if you can't fill it, it doesn't do you any good. So we have to sort of steer away from that and focus on our big reservoir and our big place where you can put water is groundwater. We have emptied more than 100 million acre feet of water, which is basically 2.5 times what we use in a year here in California. We have emptied that space in our groundwater basins. We need to start finding better ways to refill that.
There's also been discussion about desalination. I mean, where does that fit into the conversation?
Desalination is expensive. Let's just make it clear. And it tends to have a significant cultural and environmental impact. I mean that. I mean, people say, why doesn't LA just get off the Delta and use desal as their approach? Well, it would take a huge plant every 5 miles along the coast of Southern California to do such a thing. You think the folks in Malibu are going to go for that? I don't think so. So desal will always be important at the margins. San Diego gets 5 to 7% of its supply from that very large desalination plant. And that doesn't sound like much, but it's really important during droughts, during periods of shortage. So we're always going to see, I think we're going to see more desal, but we're likely to see in small amounts and in places where it's brackish water, like Antioch, at the base of the Delta, where it costs a lot less to basically clean up the water and make it usable for drinking.
And in the meantime, I mean, we're dealing with conditions that even in the report you found are once hard to imagine. How does this trickle down or trickle up to water managers?
Well, so this is, I think, the sort of the great awakening throughout California. when I first got into this business, we relied entirely on historic conditions as a predictor of the future. And what has changed throughout the system now is that the future is very uncertain. And in fact, I think, you know, thanks to really good quality science that's being done in our universities and labs and in the federal government in particular, we can see what the future looks like. And there's no longer denying it. We're now starting to adapt to it. And I think that's the big sea change over the last 10 years. And you can thank the 2012-2016 drought as sort of triggering all of that. Policymakers, scientists, everybody said, okay, it's here. It's time to adapt.
Yeah, you have the picture of Governor Jerry Brown walking on just a dry flat of land that typically up in Phillips Station should be inundated with snow for snow surveys. When it comes down to individual use residents that live in the state, you know, we've been asked to conserve water at a lot of regions across California. But you said that California communities essentially use the same amount of water that they did as back in the late 1980s, despite our population growing. So about, 10 million people in that time?
Yep.
So is water conservation on an individual level still really important if the use has stayed stagnant with a population growth?
So as we discovered this year and during this particular drought, this three-year drought, there's still room for conservation. I mean, and you know that every time you drive through a community, particularly in the Sacramento area, and you see vast lawns.
Yeah.
I mean, right there. I mean, for your last interview, my suggestion was kill your television. Jerry Brown would say kill your lawn. Okay, so you know, half of the water use that we have in urban areas goes to outdoor irrigation. So we still have some room to adapt in terms of conservation. But there are areas in the state where there isn't a lot of room left to adapt. Those are the places that don't have large lawns, that don't have a lot of landscaping. And they have wrung almost as much water as they can out of their system through conservation. So that's the challenge, is we just basically get what you can call hardened demand. I mean, at some point, we've wrung all the water we can out of that system. So we're going to need some other approaches. And to the credit, throughout, particularly in urban areas in California, there is a lot of innovation going on and a lot of investment of money in it. I mean, in Southern California, stormwater reuse and recapture, recycling of wastewater, lots of putting water into groundwater basins, some really smart stuff is being done. This is why I'm actually optimistic, which is not my style, I suppose, as a scientist. Sometimes we become cynical about this stuff. But no, actually, I'm optimistic that smart people are making smart investments. And the future is, we're not going to dry up and blow away, much to the chagrin of the New York Times.
Well, when it comes to the investment, just a little dig there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, you know, the solutions that we're talking about, and with water is not immune from inequity. And especially when you look at the Central Valley, there are low-income communities that struggle for access just to clean, safe water. What solutions are taking shape?
So again, this is one of those places where we used to just talk about it, and now we're actually starting to do stuff about it. And it helps that there's money available. This is one of the problems that can be solved with money. This is drilling new wells. This is connecting wells to larger, deeper wells. This involves consolidation of these small community systems, which are woefully inefficient. There's a variety of things that can be done. So I'm actually... we're headed in the right direction. We've got a long way to go on equity in these communities. But I want to say that the other equity issue we often don't talk about a third of urban California are people who are low income. And to solve our water supply systems, we're going to have to make a lot of investments. More than 90% of what we spend on water in California comes from ratepayers. And these are the people who are paying rates. So the equity discussion needs to include people in the cities as well as these rural communities, these disadvantaged rural communities. So that is a larger conversation that's going on all over the place right now. And I think it's very healthy.
Yeah. Heading up to the state, to Del Norte County and Humboldt County along the Klamath River, I mean, something is taking shape that has been years or even decades in the making, and that's the removal of four dams along the Klamath River. I visited the Yurok tribe this summer, and they talked at length about it. And this is pretty historic. It's going to be the largest demolition project in the country's history. What does this signify? Why is this important, removing four dams up in the northwestern corner of our state?
So there's two perspectives on this. One is, let's just talk about this most simple tribal justice question. I mean, those tribes on the North Coast have been connected to that river. Every aspect of their culture is tied to that river and the salmon that run up and down the river. The removal of these four hydropower dams, which have no impact on flood control, no impact on water supply whatsoever, but in fact are a major impediment to migration of salmon into the upper watershed where there's good habitat for spawning. This is a big deal, particularly for the tribes. It's also a big deal nationally and internationally. This is the largest river restoration program in the history of the United States. Nothing comes close, and arguably in the world. So all eyes are on this, especially because there's a lot of uncertainties of what's going to happen when you take these four dams out. But I do want to caution, that doesn't solve the problem of the Klamath Basin, because most of these fish spawn in tributaries. And so we still have to focus on the conditions in the tributaries, but at least now they can get to the tributaries.
Finally, in the last minute that we have, I mean, the purpose of these annual reports going back, 9 or 10 years, they go into the hands of lawmakers and to people who can actually make change. And you're optimistic about the outlook for California's water year. When have you seen the report and the research that you're doing lead to really kind of fundamental policy changes that impact daily lives for Californians?
And my people who work on this kind of stuff will be very sympathetic. You never can say, I caused that to happen. I mean, our report caused X to happen. But we have noticed that some of the language of our historic reports are starting to appear in all kinds of places, like, for example, the governor's water supply strategy. I mean, that's kind of like right out of some of our reports. So whether we are the cause of it or we just enabled it, we never really know. But it's worth making these kinds of investments so that people can get, particularly, we often target legislators and their staff and the governor's office and folks like that. So they've got a simple way to understand a problem and to see what the solutions are.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey, for joining us to simplify a very complicated problem.
And let me finish by saying support Capital Public Radio, as my wife and I do every month. It's a pledge drive. There, I put in my plug for you guys.
We're about to head to more a fun drive.
I know that.
Jeffrey Mount is a senior fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC, sharing their report on California's water priorities for next year and beyond. You're listening to Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.